Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday. It is. I was off yesterday. Thanks to Peter Donalds for filling in for me while I celebrated President's Day in a very quiet way. It's the 20th of February, this hour of the program. I don't know if you saw the Week in Review last Sunday. It was a front page story in the New York Times, and it had the headline, Leftward Ho. Found in part of the first paragraph, there is even talk of a stutter, clear throat, perish the thought, liberal resurgence. The article asked the question, do we have a liberal moment here or a conservative slump? Presidential candidates are talking about universal health care without being tarred as supporters of socialized medicine. There is support for raising the minimum age. Stem cell research is on the table. Gay and lesbian civil unions. Alternative energy. Increased financial aid to offset the cost of college. Voters 18 to 25 are much more Democratic than previous generations. And the ratio for Democratic voters who describe themselves as liberal, 32%, has gone up, while those who say they are conservative Democrats has dropped. 4 years earlier, well, that's 23%. 4 years earlier, it was 27% of Democrats identifying themselves as conservatives and 26% as liberals. So, is this a liberal trend or is this just a little bitty liberal moment in history? We have two guests with us to talk about this, and I think that we'll have a lot of calls on this issue as well. Professor Joseph Lowndes is with us, assistant professor in political science at the University of Oregon. Professor Lowndes, hello. Thanks so much for being with us. Whoops. Professor Lowndes, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, good.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you fine. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
And also joining us is Professor Joseph Astrup, who is head of the Department of Political Science and associate professor at Kansas State University. Professor Astrup, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you very much, Kathleen, for inviting me.
So what happened in the last 4 years that we have more Democrats who are calling themselves liberal Democrats rather than conservative Democrats? Professor Lowndes, you want to start?
Well, I think that there's, you know, there's a number of ways to look at it, and I think it will be, we're not going to know exactly the reasons why this has happened yet. I think it'll take time for these things to shake out. But certainly, the war in Iraq has had a dampening effect on kind of Republican identity generally. I would say that's probably the largest thing. But I think in other ways, basic staples of the Republican message have started to run out of gas a little bit. And so whether this means that liberals are going to be able to build on this is unclear yet. But I think that some issues that have kind of come to the fore in dramatic ways, certainly the Bush administration's campaign in the Middle East, issues of global warming, universal health care, other things have all kind of been cast in a more, well, not progressive life, and certainly people are looking for different answers than have been provided by the Republicans, I think.
And what's the basic staple of the Republican message that we're not buying anymore?
Well, I think, you can see, for instance, the way I think privatization as a kind of a larger kind of frame for many domestic policies, certainly Social Security, Bush tax cuts, which have gone to benefit the wealthiest Americans, and other issues, domestically, which are economic issues, kind of old New Deal issues, have come back and become important. And in terms of foreign policy, I think kind of a general unilateralist approach has not turned out the way the Bush administration had promised it would. So I think those are probably two of the major things. And, of course, climate change is the other one, which I think has become important.
Mm-hmm. Professor Astrup, why more Democrats saying I'm a liberal?
Well, I think also you have, over the course of a number of years, kind of the foundation being built for more people calling themselves liberal. We have groups like MoveOn.org that have been active well since President Clinton's impeachment situation. And they have done a good job of keeping the grassroots growing and strong and keep making sure that people are out there, or at least individuals who are liberally oriented, are constantly motivated and seeing issues that are at least represent opportunities for liberals to engage. One of the things that's going to be necessary for this to move beyond an infancy, though, for liberalism is for them to come up with what might be called a framework that people can easily apply across a wide range of issues. The Republicans have had the advantage in this respect, especially conservatives, because they have used privatization as kind of their overarching framework, that is the free market and making sure that people have, quote unquote, their money to spend as opposed to the government's having that money through taxes. And I think that's been a very popular type of message because it fits into kind of an overarching framework that a lot of people have in the United States, which is naturally oriented towards kind of a libertarian bent. And I think that he's right in the sense that, you know, that message has run on to hard times, and you add on to that situation the situation of things like Hurricane Katrina, where the government
yes.
just seemed like it was unable to operate, and that just reflected poorly on the Republicans' ability and the conservative philosophy's ability to govern effectively.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the whole combination of different things, whether it's the kind of privatization running out of steam or the fact that the government looked like it was unable to really handle a crisis situation because there had been so much disinvestment in government operations over the years, or the situation in Iraq, which has just simply compounded the problems, or any number of different things like global warming. All these things kind of add up to an opportunity now for liberalism to come in with answers where the conservative philosophy seems to have failed.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was always true, although I can remember sometimes when young people said they were more conservative than previous generations, but this other part of the article, voters ages 18 to 25, far more Democratic than previous generations. What does that mean for the upcoming elections? And this has always been a group that's been hard to get to the polls. Is it, well, that's interesting, they're not going to do anything with it, or is this significant?
I think it's significant in the long term, but not in the short term, because you're right. That group of voters is just less likely to make it to the polls. And so as a consequence, you know, their impact upon any given election is only at the margins. And so in a close election, they could play a very important role. But, you know, for the average congressional race, that's probably not the case. And so I think that basically, that type of change is important more for the future when that group becomes 25 to 35 and they start owning homes and they start becoming more active in the community, and that life cycle effect of those individuals then starting to play a more active role in politics also comes into play.
Yeah, let's just do this on purely anecdotal evidence, but Professor Lowndes, what are you noticing at the University of Oregon? Are students pretty active?
Yeah, I mean, there's actually students active on both the left and right here. Oregon is a very mixed state politically. But I found in the last, say, maybe 3 years, there's been more kind of disenchantment with, say, the Bush administration nationally, and more concern about the war. And so students have become more active in anti-war issues and, environmental issues. I think part of it is that the other thing about this is that there is the Republicans, having been in power for so long, have got themselves caught up in corruption scandals, which I think any party that's in Washington for long enough and in dominance will do. But the Abramoff scandal, other things have kind of added up to creating kind of students tend to be idealistic and kind of want a certain sense of kind of innocence and purity in their politics. And I think the Republicans don't represent that for students anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But students trending Democratic is different than students being really active. I don't think student activism is not as strong as it was even, say, in the late 1990s when there began to be
really
on the left a kind of a strong anti-sweatshop movement, for instance,
mm-hmm.
and kind of this growing anti-globalization movement, which kind of came to a screeching halt with September 11th, 2001. But I think this activism may be building again. But I think, you know, but I think that's where students really make a difference, not at the voting booth as much as building kind of youth-oriented social movements, which mm-hmm. which push change from the outside.
What about at Kansas State University? What's the climate there, Professor Astrup?
Well, I think it's much the same as it is in Oregon. We have a fairly active left movements, but we also have some very strong right movements, and they tend to show up in the newspapers in terms of battling out over who was correct in terms of the decision to go to Iraq. But by and large, I think that I would agree that really back in the 90s, we saw students be a little bit more active than they are today. It's kind of interesting that while the war in Iraq is certainly a significant issue, it's not the type of galvanizing issue that the Vietnam War was.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's largely because this is a volunteer army versus a draft-based army. And so that means that this doesn't have the direct impact upon most students' life that it used to have. But on the other hand, it doesn't mean it's not a significant issue. It's just not one where they're really mobilized to protest or to voice their opinion in a strong and forceful way.
Mm-hmm. What about, and we've been lucky that we haven't had any attacks in the United States since September 11. Certainly it's been a mess in other parts of the world. But this idea that the Republicans are good on security issues and the Democrats on socialist issues, if, heaven forbid, we should have another problem here, that we would see a complete turnaround, that we would see Americans saying that they are more conservative because they go to the Republicans for protection?
I guess my feeling about that is that I think that was decisive in the last presidential election in ways that were kind of only indirectly reflected in exit polls. But I'm not sure that Republicans would get the same attraction out of that a second time, in part because the war has gone so terribly in Iraq that it seems that Americans have been made to feel more insecure about U.S. policy in relationship to all things in the Middle East. So I think that it has. I mean, I could be certainly probably will be wrong about this, as political scientists often are. But it doesn't seem that they will. There's not the same kind of split of kind of a George Lakoff, daddy party on security and mommy party on social issues that mm-hmm. there's been in the past.
Do you agree, Professor Astrup?
Well, I think probably the situation is that the Republicans have been really, really pushing this issue so much that there's been no attack because they've been in charge, basically, and security is so good that if there was an attack, during the latter parts of the days of the Bush administration, that might do more to indict the Bush administration than help them. And that might hurt the Republicans even more because they have been saying that the only reason why we haven't had an attack is because of their security measures. And so I think it may, you add on top of everything else, and the failures in Iraq, or this then suggests that there's a failure at home in terms of the strategy as well. And so I don't know that that would necessarily help the Bush administration.
Let's go to phone calls for our guests, and we'll do it in a moment. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it's 414-227-2050. Why is it that the ratio of Democratic voters who describe themselves as liberal Democrats has been going up? The share of Democrats who say they are conservative has dropped 23%. And also, we're seeing that the Democratic Party has by 34% to 31% Republican in party affiliation, which is the largest Democratic advantage since the Clinton administration. If you feel comfortable in identifying yourself, you can do so and say why you consider yourself a conservative or a liberal, and why, though, the broader question, there seems to be a liberal, is it moment or is it trend going on? We'll take your phone calls in a moment. We have two guests with us, Professor Joseph Lowndes, who joins us from Oregon, where he is assistant professor in political science at the University of Oregon, and Professor Joseph Astrup, who is the head of the Department of Political Science at Kansas State University and also an associate professor there. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program today, we'll be speaking with the co-author of The Race Beat, The Press, The Civil Rights Struggle, and The Awakening of a Nation. Hank Klibanoff will be with us. He is a native of Alabama and is the managing editor for news at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. He has reported for a number of other papers, and this book is an extraordinary account of the press and how it took the press to really awaken the whole country's attention to the issue of civil rights in this country. It is just a very, very well done book. You know, we gloss over that, and so many people died, and there was so much ugliness and hatred, and it's quite an account. So that's coming up, hour number two. Our phone number, 800-486-8655. Is there a liberal trend, or is it a little liberal moment? We go to Doug from Wauwatosa, our first caller. Hi, Doug.
Morning. I hope you had a great President's Day yesterday.
It was kind of quiet, but thanks. I read about the president, so.
Were you? Oh, I thought you would be home, like, polishing your Abraham Lincoln shrine.
Darn it, I don't have one of those. Maybe I should.
That surprises me, actually. At any rate, yeah, I definitely consider myself way left of center, and I've been encouraged by some of the trends that have occurred lately. I was a ward leader for Move On during the Kerry campaign, and it was not difficult to get volunteers, especially high school kids from Tulsa East, for example, very dedicated, very intelligent students, and I was encouraged by that. Our ward went Democrat for the first time in quite a long time, and I also think that there are many people who were liberal before this, but it depended on how you'd phrase the question. For example, if you'd ask them if they wanted socialized medicine, people would say, well, mm-hmm. not necessarily, but universal health care, yeah, they would be in favor of that. In terms of environmental policies, if you said conservation instead of environmental issues, even if it was the same exact issue you were trying to ask them about, they would vote, in favor of it, some would say. And I just think that the Internet has also been a galvanizing force. I mean, I see the success of Democracy Now! and other venues on the web. And that's where most of the anti-war sentiment is coming from. And it seems as if the Ned Lamont victory before Lieberman went independent was also a positive step. So, I mean, even before the Iraq War began, there were massive protests in the United States. I think that's unprecedented in terms of major conflict. Also here in Wauwatosa, we passed a non-binding referendum to bring our troops home.
Yes.
It's been, I feel it's been very positive. I'm encouraged by it. And I do see some anecdotal evidence mm-hmm. relating to that.
Professor Astrup, you want to respond?
I think he's right. That is, there is the foundation there, and there are the groups and the issues by which to galvanize around. What I don't see yet in terms of the left is kind of what I would say is the an overarching framework that kind of unites the disparate groups mm-hmm. together, whether you're an anti-war protester or whatever, or somebody who's associated with global warming and interest in that type of idea. What I would say is that his point, though, about the framing of the issues is an extremely important one, and people like James Carville, for example, have spent a lot of time on how the left should frame their issues so that it has the broadest appeal, because his point is exactly right. When you talk to people about universal health care, that's something that has broad appeal. But if you say, call it socialized medicine, that does not. Mm-hmm. And so it's one of those things that where the left has been working at, very hard in terms of trying to frame the issues in a way that spins those issues in a way that's positive towards them. Mm-hmm. And I think that the more they can do that, and plus then provide an overarching kind of liberal framework that most people can grab hold of, a hook, if you will, that most people can grab hold of, this movement, which right now really in its infancy, will build upon kind of the failures of the right and go forward and maybe be the liberal reawakening that some people have talked about.
Interesting. Thanks so much, Doug, for your call. I can't tell you how surprised I've been, because it is a change to hear presidential candidates and others, Professor Lowndes, talk about universal health care. You know, and nobody's shocked by it. Universal health care. A few years ago, you would have said, ooh, big government.
I mean, one of the things about that is that the Republicans built their kind of party dominance through kind of an anti-statist message, you know, kind of an anti-federal government message. You know, Reagan says in 1980, the most dangerous 11 words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. And there was a way at the time, you know, that liberal ideas were seeming to be kind of, you know, also out of gas in a certain way. But what's happened over time is that rhetoric, which was so strong, and it was linked to issues of racialized issues, I think, of crime and welfare, as well as kind of a certain kind of Cold War posturing, has really kind of fallen on hard times because it just hasn't worked in the long run, or it's come up against the limits of what it can do. So issues like healthcare, which even, you know, in the mid 90s, you remember that Clinton was one of his first major failures was an attempt to push for broader healthcare coverage, is now becoming much more of a possible thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, and part of that is that everybody's hurting because nobody's fixing the system, right?
Yes.
It's not a
yes.
liberal conservative issue. Businesses are hurting. Americans are hurting. Somebody do something.
Yes.
We don't care if
it's... And really just, and usually what happens is that when large industrial corporate interests decide they're going to galvanize in order to fix something, usually something happens.
Mm-hmm.
And right now that's what you're seeing happening is that the GMs of the world and Fords and all the other major manufacturers in the United States and a lot of other interests are saying, you know, this healthcare system is killing us,
right.
and you know we can't be competitive on an international scale unless we get this fixed, and so I think that's one of the reasons why the whole private healthcare system is now under attack because private interests are attacking it now.
Let's go to other phone calls. Jason from Milwaukee's next. Hi, Jason.
How you doing?
All right. How are you?
Pretty good.
Good.
Basically, my comment first would be, it's great that a younger crowd, such as either high school or college, is getting into more political debates. My question is basically, when are the American people actually going to be able to make a choice in what their country spends on, such as, healthcare, one of the biggest issues in our country, as well as education. So it's easier for a foreigner to come to our country and get a scholarship and also not even have to pay anything on that scholarship for the rest of their life and pretty much get free education. A lot of my friends have applied for grants or for pretty much education help, and they're told that they make too much. And these are people that have, you know, a studio apartment. They make the bare minimum just to get by, and they're told they make too much or their parents make too much or something like that.
Do you see this as a liberal conservative issue, Jason, or not?
I really don't see it as either or liberal or conservative or anything. I think it's just as a government, as our government, I think it would be best to support our own people more than foreign people that come to the country.
All right, thanks for your call, Professor Lowndes.
Well, I'm not sure that it's the case that people from other countries are getting a leg up over Americans in terms of education, but I do think that there have been severe education cuts over the last 20 years, which have made public institutions almost essentially private. At the University of Oregon, for instance, gets something like 13% of its budget from the state legislature, which means that grants and out-of-pocket from parents is really how students are making it through the university.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be a galvanizing liberal issue if there is a push towards kind of demands for education that we see in other areas. And it's certainly the case that Students are being squeezed more and more, and more and more working-class students aren't getting into universities. As state universities become more privatized, that means that only middle and upper-middle-class kids mm-hmm. are able to get in. And so that's, you know, that, there's a great window after World War II of an opening up of great public universities, which made America distinct among other industrial nations. And now that window seems to be closing in certain ways. And mm-hmm. that would be a clear area for Democrats to involve themselves in, both at the state and national level, I think.
And it was on the top of those, what were they, six issues, Professor Astrop, that the Democrats wanted to take on in the first 100 hours?
Yeah, and that was one of the top things, was mm-hmm. making sure that students had lower interest rates on their loans. But notice they're still getting loans. And I think that Professor Lowndes makes a very important point, that is, and that's something that's kind of being lost in this debate. There are huge generational disparities now between what one generation paid for their college education versus now another generation.
That's true.
And really what's happened is that the burden of paying for a college education is now being placed on this generation of students,
mm-hmm.
much more than previous two generations. And so the reality is that now in our information age economy, that college education is needed more than ever in order to make it in the world. And so, you know, all these factors are coming together to perhaps mobilize a group of younger individuals towards at least addressing the issue of education.
Mm-hmm. Our number, we have one line open if you'd like to join us. Are we seeing a liberal moment or a liberal trend is the question of the hour. And our number is 800-486-8655-227-2050 in Milwaukee. Carrie from Madison, hello.
Hi. I think a lot of the money that is being spent towards the war could be spent for our own people in our own country, including education, healthcare. I think people just don't have the money anymore, and they're starting to see that, and that's maybe why it's going more liberal, because they're getting sick of the prices going up when they can't afford stuff.
Mm-hmm. Professor Lowndes, this war is costing a heck of a lot of money, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, tens of billions.
Yes.
Certainly, I think that's one of the things that's discrediting the Republicans as well, is what, you know, this is, not only is there, you know, enormous blood and treasure being spent over there right now, but the American economy's future is being mortgaged on this struggle with no end in sight. And that's certainly something that I think that is becoming increasingly clear, which Democrats have been able to begin to build on, I think.
Mm-hmm. Professor Astrop, would you comment on this, please?
Yeah, I just think that, you know, you think about framing issues, and probably one of the remarks that resonates most with many voters out there, especially those that may not be the people who are against the war from the start, is that the true costs of this war, which are hundreds of billions of dollars, are being borne by the American taxpayers at the expense of domestic mm-hmm. programs,
mm-hmm.
and plus, you know, they're not seeing the results of it. One of the results is that Iran may actually expand its sphere of influence much further than anybody would have ever thought possible prior to the war. And so these are the kinds of things that really do resonate with voters when you make that type of argument that, you know, this money could be better spent someplace else. And that is kind of the framework that a lot of liberals are using in order to talk about the war.
Mm-hmm. What about this? Let me just ask both of your opinions on this. The Democrats have been roundly criticized by some for having this whole hodgepodge of liberal ideas. And let's address the war in this regard. You know, you divide it into three parts. You get out in 6 months. You get out immediately. You get out in a year. You don't get out. You try to help the reconstruction more and win the hearts of the people there. They're not of one mind here. Does that hurt the cause of liberalism, or is that just the way liberals are?
I think that hurts the cause of liberalism. I think that anytime you're dealing with a set of issues and you're presenting an ideology that supposedly has an answer to a set of policy questions, that when you're not coming with a consistent message, that really what you're saying is that my political philosophy doesn't really have an answer to this particular type of situation. And so overall, if you're not presenting a coherent message, what I would call a hook, that a number of different issues can hang on, I think it's at that point that all of a sudden now the Democrats are the ones who are in the position where they have to govern, and you're seeing that split philosophy among the Democrats is hurting their capacity even in Congress to make a basic decision about what they're going to say about the war in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
They finally have settled upon a very milquetoast kind of statement of, we support the troops, but we don't support President Bush's policy.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, I'm not so quite sure that satisfies the far left. I've heard a lot of the far left discussing about the fact that, there was a very clear message sent in the last election, and that's not the message that was sent. We want our troops home.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that ultimately that lack of cohesion does come back to hurt the left.
Do you agree, Professor Lowndes?
I think it's true in some regard, but it's a complicated issue. I mean, certainly issues of foreign policy are generally more complex than your average voter or non-voter can get their head around because they don't have the time to study foreign policy all day. But it's to be fair to kind of Democrats in Congress on this, although I think I agree with Professor Astrup that a much stronger message should have been sent, and a certain kind of clarity can always help. I mean, Nixon in the 68 campaign says he has a very clear idea of what he's going to do and how we're going to get out of Vietnam. It involves, in his case, saying that he has a secret plan.
Yeah, the secret plan.
But, he claimed to have a strong position on that was going to get us out within a certain time frame. But, of course, he wasn't able to. Once he's in there, then it becomes his war after 6 months, and it brings him down as well. I don't think that there are very easy answers about this, but certainly Democrats who waver because they feel like they'll be seen as non-patriotic are making a mistake. I mean, I think that, Congress could have it almost was taken off the table immediately that whether Congress is going to actually control the purse strings, in terms of this war. In some ways, the executive power has gotten too strong in terms of the ability to wage wars, and Congress needs to take that power back. And part of taking that power back says that they're going to decide how and when and if money's going to be spent there. So there's an institutional issue here about the relationship between Congress and the presidency, I think.
We go to Harrison from Milwaukee next. Hi, Harrison.
Hi.
Hi.
I think that the whole idea of taking part and labeling, the conservative and liberal is wrong. I have very strong conservative upbringing. However, I'm very liberal in looking at the issues, and I think that the day that we're going to stop looking at the labels and we're going to pick up what's good from either side, we're not going to have the problems that they're having right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. I would imagine there are a big chunk of people who say, don't put me in any of these groups. I'm my own guy or gal, Professor Astrup.
Oh, you're most certainly right. I mean, there's a large proportion of people that kind of fit into that, or at least claim to fit into that framework. And some of it is because Professor Lowndes' point that they don't have time to look into every issue under the sun to make a decision. But that's also the reason why ideology is important, is because they don't have the time to look at every issue. And so they use certain kinds of shortcuts, and one of the shortcuts is an ideology that presents a coherent message or a coherent answer to a whole set of policy issues.
Mm-hmm.
So they use it as a shortcut to make a decision about what policy they're going to support. And so liberalism traditionally has used government as a kind of a positive force to help
help the downtrodden, to help those less fortunate in society, to create a more equal and a more equal society. And I think that's probably still the message of liberalism. But you know, clearly, you know, in the 1980s, that whole idea ran out of gas. And I think that that really what we're seeing, though, is that if this whole movement towards a more energized liberal movement, they're going to have to once again make sure that this ideology has a set of answers that people can look to as a shortcut in terms of trying to make decisions about what's right and what's wrong.
The question of the hour: are we in a liberal moment or a conservative slump? We're talking this hour with Professor Joseph Astrup, who is head of the Political Science Department at Kansas State University, and Professor Joseph Lowndes, assistant professor in political science at the University of Oregon. Our phone lines have been humming during this hour, but eventually you would be able to get through. You can call us at 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program, we'll be speaking with the co-author of The Race Beat, The Press, The Civil Rights Struggle, and the Awakening of a Nation. U.S. Representative John Lewis has said that if it had not been for the media, the print media and television, the civil rights movement would have been like a bird without wings, a choir without a song. This is an exhaustive history of the press and the civil rights movement, and it is so well written. We'll be talking about the march from Selma to Montgomery and the Emmett Till story and why it was that the press didn't pay any attention to these issues. The black press did, but nobody else did for such a long period of time. Emmett Till changed that, and certainly the civil rights struggle and marches changed that as well. And it wasn't all a pretty story, far from it. So we'll look forward to that interview after the news. 800-486-8655 is our number. We go to Patty next from Rice Lake. Hi, Patty. Thanks for waiting.
Hi. Good morning.
Hi.
This discussion, I have a 17-year-old and a 21-year-old. My 21-year-old's in college. And from talking to both their friends, I am very hopeful that liberal ideas are going to grow. But my fear is that I am far left of the Democrats, and the Democrats really have, I think, lost the confidence of a lot of liberals because of the way they've acted for the past few years, you know, practically hiding from some of what liberal people consider outrageous behavior. I already see it happening again. At one point, there was discussion of creating a livable wage, which would be between $12 and $17 an hour. And that discussion has just disappeared, and they can't even pass anything at $7 an hour, which really isn't going to do a whole lot, I don't think, for working-class people. So the young people I know are talking about third parties, the Green Party, the Socialist Party, and I'm hopeful that is what's going to grow in the future. And I'll listen to comments off the air.
Fine. Thanks so much for the call. What about third parties, Professor Lowndes?
Well, I think she makes a very important point in a number of regards. In terms of third parties, if you look at the rise of the Republican right from, say, from the late 40s, you know, up through the 60s, there are moments where third parties or splits were decisive. The Dixiecrat Revolt in 1948, where Southern Democrats split from the National Party and ran Strom Thurmond, created a rift in the Democratic Party that never quite healed, which began the process by which Republicans were able to make inroads in the South. And then George Wallace, in his campaigns in the 1960s, he ran as a Democrat. He was the governor of Alabama, a segregationist populist who ran as a Democrat and then as an independent, and he pushed ideas to the right from within and outside the Democratic Party in a way that ended up helping the Republicans in the long run. They were decisive in helping Republicans. Nixon used Wallaceite rhetoric in the 68 and 72 campaigns, and then Ronald Reagan ended up sounding a lot like Wallace in many regards by 1980. So I think that third parties can play a role. They're unlikely to, unless another party has a meltdown like the Whigs in the 1850s, to come into power. But I think they can really shape what the dominant parties do. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's an important point.
Professor Astrup?
Yeah, and he's exactly right. That is, and in both of those situations, matter of fact, throughout all that history, it was in that particular case what we had was the Democratic Party that was the big umbrella party that had liberals and conservatives, and the conservatives were mostly based in the South. And basically that whole process, notice, left the Democrats in a situation where they became mostly a party of the left. Indeed, even your polling results suggest that the Democrats are fewer conservative Democrats now than ever before. And that's been a long process that's taken place primarily in the South, but also in other parts of the nation for many years. Mm-hmm. The other part of that, though, is that there's been a shift also now in the Republican Party, in kind of a similar type of movement, whereby those folks who are less oriented towards a strong conservative message of the Republican Party are starting to split away from the Republicans. But that doesn't lead to a more leftward tilted Democratic Party, which satisfies the comments of this particular phone call, this particular individual. Rather, that leads to a more moderate Democratic Party, because most of the folks are coming over, kind of sliding over from the Republicans, and that's been a long process that's been taking place since the 1950s in the North, first starting in the Northeast, and then moving basically into other territories or other regions of the country. That doesn't create the type of liberal Democratic Party that this particular phone caller is talking about. It creates less of a liberal Democrat. It creates more of a moderate Democratic Party, and so that doesn't satisfy that type of individual. So once again, those third parties could play a role in terms of moving the Democrats further to the left, in the sense of rising up, presenting their own candidates, and then allowing those younger voters or whoever to support that type, those type of liberal ideas.
Chris from Madison is next. Hello, Chris.
Hello. Yeah, on the moment versus trend thing, I'm thinking that if the Democrats are just going to put up like non-binding resolutions against the war and that kind of thing, it's going to be a moment, and it's going to be reminiscent of the 92 to 94 moment when there was a small window and it went away immediately because nothing happened. And that's my whole thought. I'll take my comments off the air.
Thanks, Chris, for the call. Professor Lowndes.
That's key. I mean, one of the things I think there's two issues here. What members of Congress are doing now in terms of their positioning on the war, and the other one is the upcoming presidential election, and seeing how potential Democratic candidates are positioning themselves in terms of this war. I mean, certainly one of the things which matters is that if politicians pay too much attention to the press and even to polling, it can hamstring them in terms of being able to take leadership positions. Again, to go back to the 1960s, when Goldwaterites took over the Republican Party in 64, everybody in the national press said repeatedly, well, this is it for the Republican Party. They've been destroyed for all time. And social scientists spoke of them also this way. But the interesting thing that happened was that the decisive positions that conservative Republicans took in 64 made for great congressional gains for the Republicans in 66 and then led to Nixon's election in 68. So there's a way in which not taking strong positions, either with the war or other issues like this, can really hurt liberals, and I think that caller is right that it will make this a blip and not the larger building process.
Mm-hmm. Jim from Milwaukee, hi.
Hi. There's two things. There's an article in Z Magazine which suggests that Obama is not as progressive as it first presents, and that's one of the reasons I'm not optimistic, because I think the people are way ahead of the party and the candidates. And the other thing is that I think is a problem is that the progress of progressive ideas will relate to the ability to connect facts and put things together. And I'll give one example of that. In general, Republicans rail against taxes. Well, we know with Katrina that the global neglect of global warming and the neglect of the levees led to the problem, which then led to great catastrophic losses, which led to a national bailout. And due to the national bailout, of course, there are less funds to give to the states for other things. So, for example, at the state level, then, we get a situation where maybe there's less money for education or less money for transportation, and that's reflected in increases in taxes at the state and local level. But nobody can make the connection as to why we have less money available to the states in the first place because of these actions of neglect with Katrina. So people have got to start making better connections or we're never going to make any progress.
Professor Astrup.
I think that's exactly right. I mean, I think that, and that's part of what the liberals need to do now is present a coherent message that helps people make those types of connections that that caller referred to. And to the extent that they can do that, that will enable this to go beyond just simply the infancy movement that it is right now. And I would just hasten to add one thing in connecting the last two calls. That is, I think the presidential candidates from the Democrats are going to play a critical role in terms of moving this forward or that just becomes a blip in history. And there is a critical window here. I think that Congress's actions, the Democrats' actions, are important, but I think probably what Democratic candidate comes out and the message they bring forward and whether or not they win with that message is going to be critical for whether or not this movement goes forward.
Mm-hmm.
Leadership is the key.
And do you see any of those candidates who are espousing this liberal trend or not?
You know, right now it's pretty early in the process, and you know they're all just starting to get their own acts together. I would hate to say that any one of them is either more likely or less likely. I mean, but I guess if I'm going to look at the top two candidates in the Democratic Party, and that would be Hillary Clinton and probably Barack Obama. That of the two, I mean, Hillary Clinton will probably follow the way that her husband did, and that was presenting really, I mean, the thing that the Republicans hated about Bill Clinton is that he often stole their issues and appropriated them for his own cause.
Yes, right.
And they hated him for
mm-hmm.
it. And liberals didn't especially like him for that either.
Right.
Because
you're right.
They were upset that uh-huh. he was not presenting what they thought was a truly liberal vision. And so I'm not quite sure that Hillary Clinton will be the answer that some liberals are wanting. But and I have to admit that Barack Obama is such a new face that I'm not sure whether or not he's the progressive answer either, but he might be more likely to be.
Mm. I think the guy who's really presenting the liberal face here, the liberal agenda, is John Edwards, isn't he?
Absolutely. Yes,
absolutely.
It's Edwards. And, you know, that he certainly, compared to his two rivals, he is far more liberal on economic issues, on race issues, on all kinds of things. And it's interesting to see the way that, you know, certainly Obama is already coming out to say that he wants to get past the battles of the 1960s, which is a certain kind of cultural resonance. But what it also means is that he wants to get past then a major divisive issues of the time, which should matter to liberals, questions of choice, you know, questions of abortion, questions of affirmative action, you know, all sorts of things which actually line up as policy issues, not just cultural fights in dorm rooms. So I think that Obama actually has positioned himself he's been quite cagey thus far, I think, in terms of where the wind is going to blow. And so I'm not sure that he will be the progressive candidate. Edwards, however, is that. And you can see the way that he already comes under attack by conservative commentators, this whole thing that happened recently with his the two bloggers on his
right, path. Yeah.
But, you know, and you also see people like conservative pundits like David Brooks has been saying very nice things about both Clinton and Obama. And, you know, that I think partly what he sees in them is as candidates who are not going to be terribly liberal in some
mm-hmm.
regard.
Hmm. Michael from Phoenix. Hi, Michael.
Hi, good morning. Excuse me. I don't know if this is a blip or a trend, but I'm wondering how much of it is just plain ordinary embarrassment of at the incompetence and the obvious failures of the Republican conservative right wing policies.
Professor Astrup.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the caller very well. Did he say that he thought it was just, this is really a function of the Republican failures?
Right, okay. Being upset at their...
Well, I absolutely. I mean, this is part of it. I mean, this, and I think this presents the window of opportunity for liberals, because right now you're seeing the kind of the conservative movement that has dominated politics, certainly since the Reagan era. It took 20 years to form prior to Reagan, really bringing it to fruition. That whole process, you know, that those ideas kind of have run out of gas. They appear to have not worked out for the best, and so as a consequence, this is presenting an opening, if you will, for liberal ideas. And it's just a question whether or not they're going to find the leadership that's necessary to really make a charge forward. And I think, once again, it comes down to whether or not there's a coherent message that not just that the far left can grab hold of, because that doesn't form a majority that can govern the country, but it has to be a message that also resonates with those people who are not on the far left. And that's something that I think everybody needs to recognize. In presenting mm-hmm. and developing an ideology, it has to be something that has broad appeal.
Mm-hmm.
And in using some powerful symbols, yes, but it has to have broad enough appeal so that the liberal ideology will actually be able to govern.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We're plowing out of time. Thank you both so much. I really enjoyed the hour. Thanks.
Well, thanks for having us.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Kathleen.
Yeah, I'm very, very happy to have you with us. Professor Joseph Astrup, who is head of the Department of Political Science at Kansas State University. Professor Joseph Lowndes, assistant professor in political science at the University of Oregon. So we thank both of them for being here. To Rhonda Fanning, thank you for producing the program. John Treader, our on-air producer in our Milwaukee studios. Thanks, John, and for all of your really smart calls. Thanks, everybody. You're such a good audience. I'm Kathleen Dunn. We have news coming up, and we'll return. Don't miss the second hour of the show. This is the Ideas, if you can help it. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.